He misses! Shipes the rebound!
Gotta push this to the basket. Take it to the basket, guys. 9 seconds.
No timeouts left.
What are they doing?
RJ Hunter for three. Go! Rod Hunter has fallen off his stool for good reason. Georgia State up by one.
This is High Motor by BetMGM. Andrew Doughty and Chase Kitty here. Thanks for clicking into the show. If you're a first-timer, welcome to you. If you're a first-timer on BetMGM.com, a reminder that you can get that risk-free promo first bet up to $600, just visit BetMGM.com, click on your state there at that landing splash page, and then Jamie Foxx will be on the next page with that $600 risk-free bet for your first bet if you are a first-timer. If you can't find it, just ping us on Twitter, at HighMotorPod, and we'll direct you or we'll put you in touch with somebody who can help you. As March Madness is firing up, that's something that you want to get to, $600 first-time risk-free bet. 2.5 weeks until Selection Sunday, and then 3 weeks until things tip off in Indiana. Back to hoops today for us, and then at the end of the show, if you want to stick around, we're going to do, I don't know, maybe 10 minutes or so on MLB win totals. It's something that we haven't talked about. We usually stick to football and college basketball here, but Chase wanted to mention a few numbers there, so we're going to get into that at the end of the show today if you do want to stick around. So after hoops, stick around if you'd like. We'll close the show with that. I want to ask you before we jump into a lot of college basketball stuff here, what do you think of the new tournament schedule? Because in this year of, I guess now, what, 12, almost 13 months, we've had so many different scheduling changes, event cancellations, events moving to different months of the year, different days, different things like that. And I think that a lot of people might have missed this when this came out. I don't even know whenever it was they released the new schedule. Instead of having the typical Thursday, Friday first round games for the NCAA tournament, as long as I can remember. I'm not sure when that first started, but that's been the format as long as I can remember. So I think a lot of people are going to miss this, and I'm sure they'll bring it up during the selection show on Sunday and promo it and advertise it like crazy. But I think a lot of people are still going to miss it. And then you also have a different schedule for the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight too, but I think that matters a little bit less with so many primetime games for those two rounds. Day of the week doesn't matter as much. First four on Thursday, first round at different locations across Indiana Friday and Saturday. What do you think of that? I know that we're in different situations because we're at home and we've been working from home for so long now. I can't even remember the last year that I wasn't working at home during the NCAA tournament. So it doesn't matter that much for us. Do you have a strong opinion either way for this? And do you think that most people will even care if it's Friday, Saturday instead of Thursday, Friday?
I mean, definitely not something I'm spending emotional energy worried about. I guess I don't like it a little bit just because I liked the cleanliness of once you get to the new week that starts on Monday, you are like into that Sweet 16. But I mean, overall, I guess I don't really care. Like, I think you hit the nail on the head. For you and I personally, we're always home. So it doesn't really matter to me. Like, my work schedule never doesn't accommodate watching college basketball, especially in March. So, like, I can sit here like an asshole and watch all day, and it doesn't really matter.
Why would you be an asshole?
You know.
Like a worthless asshole?
Yeah, just collecting money, sitting on my butt in my house.
Paying your tax bill.
Just paying. Oh, God, it's been a tough week.
I think they could keep it like this. I've never, it's not a matter, I know why they've had it, the schedule they've had it for so long, but, and they don't really struggle with TV ratings. I mean, it's $1 billion per year deal with CBS and Turner Sports. Like, they're not looking for more ratings, I guess, per se, but I'm sure they are for more advertising dollars. But I wonder, after they do this, is this going to be something where they say, hey, that worked out well, that was great having all of Friday, maybe people take a three-day weekend. I know a lot of people are still at home. Maybe they parlay it into a four-day weekend. I think the people that have that took off work in the past, they're just going to do that no matter what, if it's a Thursday, Friday, or if it's a Tuesday, Wednesday, no matter what. But I think when they have this first round on a Saturday, and they get that full day of games, And then once you shift to second round, then obviously Sweet 16 and Elite Eight, you're going to have more primetime games. And I haven't looked at the actual tip-off schedule for Monday, even if they have it yet. But I'm wondering if they'll keep it like this moving forward. I don't think they would go to a full-on Saturday, Sunday first round and then do second round on Monday or Tuesday. But, I mean, can you see that happening, I guess? And now that I think about it more, I think it really could happen, because why would you not have a weekend day in which you have whatever number of games, 16 games spread out throughout the entire day? You think that ratings would be higher for that day, wouldn't it, as opposed to a Thursday, Friday?
Yeah, but I think the counter to that, the cost of that is you are moving a more advanced round onto a weekday to highlight an earlier round where the games matter less. You know, there's people, I think,
yeah, maybe
farther away from the games, people sometimes forget those first couple days. Yeah, sometimes there's a lot of buzzer beaters and it's really, really exciting and stuff is just flying left and right. But there's also a lot of like twos beating 15s by 29 points and ones just smashing 16s. There are non-competitive games, especially in that first round. So I get what you're saying. I think there's another side to it as well.
We're going to do a lot of college basketball, specifically going to the NCAA tournament stock discussion today. Taking the stock of teams 2.5 weeks out from Selection Sunday, I think we can jump off with this question, this discussion, the national championship contender line. So for me, that line of where I can say these are the true national championship contenders, I'm drawing that line right now after Gonzaga, Baylor, Ohio State, and Michigan, the top four projected one seeds. They were the four one seed in the committee rankings, 10 days ago now? Really, everybody that means anything has them as their one seeds. And then Illinois is kind of in limbo for me after that Michigan State game. So I don't want to overreact to that game. I get that Michigan State is playing better, so it's not an atrocious loss. I think it's actually probably a Q1 loss because Michigan State might be on the fringe. I got to check my net rankings, but I thought Michigan State is now in the top 75, so that would just be a Q1 loss. So it's not that bad of a loss in terms of the team sheet for Illinois. And as we mentioned, I went over those numbers a couple of weeks ago. National champions have losses like that. They rarely are blown out. I think the number I used was 18 points. They're rarely blown out by 18 or more points from the regular season or conference tournaments. But they usually do lose a game like that to an inferior team by 10, 12, 15 points. And the margin was 11 points. For Illinois, Michigan State. The true national championship contender for line for me is after those four. Then I think there's another like sub line after Illinois, because I really do think Illinois could win the national championship. I just think that there's a line after them then, because this is a really weak group of 2, 3, and 4 seeds, at least compared to past years. For example, I like Alabama a lot. We brought them up. I probably like them a little bit more than you do. I like Alabama quite a bit this year. Nate Oates is second in my Coach of the Year rankings behind Scott Drew right now. We both like Alabama, but Alabama, Houston, Oklahoma, Villanova, Virginia, Iowa, all those teams that are kind of floating in and out of those 2, 3, and 4 lines, maybe even a couple more down from that, I'm having a hard time saying like Houston can win it all or Villanova can win it all. I'm a big believer in having a very deep Final Four contender pool every year. I mean, it's only 4 wins to get there. You and I laugh about that all the time when people will make their Final Four picks in November without actually seeing the matchups. But in terms of this year, the national championship pool, it feels really weak to me. I love Baylor and Gonzaga. I think those are two of the best teams we've seen in college basketball over the last 10 or 15 years. And even though it's hard to really draw a line because, like I said, as we've talked about so many times, I want to see the matchups before saying this team can or cannot make a run. But I do think there's a line after those 4-1 seeds. Now I'm blanking on the 4-1 seeds. Gonzaga, Baylor, Ohio State, and Michigan. Then another one after Illinois. Do you even have a line? If so, where is your line right now? Are you in a similar spot as I am?
Yeah, I was coming into this episode because I knew we were going to do this topic. And I think the imaginary line in my head that you and I have talked about both on and off the air is, hey, it's Gonzaga, Baylor, and then everybody else, there's some distance. So I wanted to challenge myself and really ask myself to individually envision each of these teams. I went 15 or 20 deep into the net. Like, do I really think this is realistic? So I asked myself, like, do I think Gonzaga is a lock to win the national championship. Of course I don't. Like, that's, you know, how many championships has Mark Few won with Gonzaga? Not a lot.
Are you asking me? Are you actually?
I'm pretty sure it's zero.
Yeah, I think I know the answer to this one.
So if you missed that day in trivia class, like, I don't want to, you know, just write it off as like, well, it's them or Baylor, because I think it's really hard, even as good as they are. And if you have not watched them, let's not hold the Iowa State thing against Baylor too hard. Like, they hadn't played in weeks. It's just, that's what happens. Like, even when you're a really good team, that's what happens. And of course, Tuesday night, that game probably a little tighter than a lot of people thought. I mean, Iowa State plus like a billion points was just easy money if you didn't.
Did you take that game for Iowa State?
I had a little bit on it, and I had it in a parlay, and then I threw like $10 on Iowa State outright just in case something real weird happened.
Yeah.
But I don't want to hold that against them. They're still really good. But those two teams, like, they would be doing something that is kind of unprecedented in modern times, in that they would be winning. Because these are not like programs that win the national championship. They're perennially really, really, really good teams, but they've still never gotten there. So, okay, what's after that? Can I see Michigan winning the national championship? Sure. Can I see Ohio State winning it? Sure. Can I see Illinois winning it? Sure. So how deep down through this list do I want to go? I think it's a little bit of hot and cold for me. Like, I'm really struggling to watch Houston to see. I think Houston's really, really good. I just don't think they're going to get to the national championship.
Yeah, I mean, is the national champion going to lose? I want to get to this later in the episode about teams that I kind of fall in love with early in the season, then I carry them for a while, and sometimes it lasts longer than others. But Houston was a team that I fell in love with, and then you lose to East Carolina. Like, is a national champion going to have a loss? And I get that we've seen this before. Like, we've seen Final Four teams and national champions where we look back and say, God, they lost to whatever team in November.
Some Big East team from 15 years ago, yeah, that, like, lost to DePaul in overtime in 2006, yeah, but then won the national championship. Like, yeah.
Are we going to be sitting here, though, in 5 weeks from now and saying national champion Houston with a loss to East Carolina on their resume? That is. I don't want to get into the thing of they're not going to do it, but that is really hard to see.
Yeah, but I think that matches so well with this exercise I put myself through of, like, can I envision that? And that's, to me, like, I don't think a national championship team does that. So maybe that's an unfair way to grade somebody, but I have found a lot of times, can you picture this happening? Is it within the realm of possibility? Is actually not a bad, like, metric for what could actually happen. I don't know about politics. I don't know about other parts of life. But, like, in sports, rarely does something happen where it's so completely out of left field that you genuinely couldn't see it coming. So I feel like, to that end, like, you could go into the teens and the net rankings and still see some of these. I don't know about Villanova. We discussed that on a recent podcast episode. This is not one of Tony Bennett's best Virginia teams. But some of these, you know, like, Florida State's 12 right now. Mm-hmm. If Florida State's in the Final Four, like, I'm not surprised at all. Loyola, Colgate, USC, I don't know about some of these, but, like, I think there are some options beyond those first couple.
You can't see Colgate cutting down the nets in Indianapolis in five weeks?
I'm having a tough time. Yeah.
This is where I could go on a net rant any day of the week, but this is where I don't understand. I know that's, you brought them up solely because they're, what are they, 12, I think? 13 in the net right now. Not a sane person in this country thinks Colgate is the 13th best team in the country. And I've tweeted about this. I've wrote about this. I have talked about this on the show. I don't understand how that is even possible. Like, I've laid out examples. I can't remember who the team was that I compared them against. It was somebody that was, like, outside of the top 50. I think it was Belmont, maybe. I can't remember who it was. Outside the top 50 in net. And all of the metrics that we know the committee uses, quite a few of them, Colgate was worse than that team. And I can't remember what team it was. They were worse than that team. So how in the world is Colgate 13th? And I don't get it. I mean, they don't have any good wins. They have, like, one bad loss, I think, to Army on the road. Maybe it was at home even. But I'm not going to get into Colgate right now. The bottom line is that you're having a hard time making an argument that, like, USC, West Virginia, Texas Tech, that tier below kind of where I drew the line of even saying, yeah, I could see this happening. Is there a line in between Baylor, Gonzaga, and then Michigan and Ohio State for you? Or are you just going to put them all together into one group?
No, I think Baylor and Gonzaga are on another level. But again, from a branding perspective, I feel like it's easier to see Michigan winning than some of those. And I know that like brands don't score points or get rebounds, but there is a theme in college basketball that the same sorts of programs usually win things. Like there's a map going around social media last week about, hey, here every state that's had a men's basketball national champion since like 1990 or something. And it's like six states. It's like, and I don't think Virginia was on there before, you know, a couple years ago. It's North Carolina, Kansas,
California,
New York,
Indiana, yeah,
Connecticut. Like it's Florida. It's pretty concentrated on the East Coast. And it's, I don't know, I don't even know if California was on there.
So you're saying since a certain
date. Since like 1990. Yeah. Like gotcha. modern times. Gotcha. Yeah. It's a pretty small list. So yes, brands don't score points. And I would never make an argument that like, well, Michigan should be favored because, you know, Jalen Rose played there 29 years ago. Like that's a dumb argument, obviously. But when we're playing the what can you envision game, I don't know. There is some sort of branding power there that you can't really account for.
Let's widen the lens a little bit. And I guess we could talk about some teams that we've already mentioned here. But who do you where is the stock up for you in college basketball right now? Again, only 2.5 weeks until Selection Sunday. Whose stock is rising to the point where you're thinking a hell of a lot better about them right now than you were a few weeks back when you really gave them no shot to be in the, not necessarily no shot, but you are surprised they're in the position that they are now and where they could be in 2.5 weeks based upon where they were 5, 6, 7 weeks ago.
Well, do you want to talk at the top, like, you know, top 20 type teams that have, you know, a shot at the Final Four, or do you want to talk
sure.
the bracket at large?
Run with it.
I would say toward the top, I might include my own guys here. The West Virginia, I guess in 30 seconds or less, I really felt like that team was going to fall apart when Shiboy left, which was right at the end of the calendar year, like right sort of as the Big 12 play was starting. And they kind of just overnight figured out how to become a pretty well-equipped offensive team. And if you follow Bob Huggins' teams through the years, regardless of what school he's been at, that's a bit unusual. Like he doesn't usually have offensive bangers that put up 80 points a game, and that's pretty much what they've been doing in conference play. It's usually just like shoot a bunch of bricks, get more possessions than the other team, and just kind of like outwill them. And this, like, they legitimately have some scorers and can get up and down the court and score the basketball. So I'm a little bit surprised. I'm not sure they're a real contender if you want to talk about national championships. I think with a good path, they can definitely go to the Final Four. And that is really, really shocking to me, given what happened, you know, 2 months ago. I would not have put them in that sort of position. And I think if you're looking at the top of the list, that's probably one of the more dramatic changes in fortunes that I think you could find.
So there's a cluster in my last bracketology. I'll do a new one. We're talking here on Wednesday, but I'll do a new one the day this drops on Thursday, the 25th. So in my last one, it is 6 days old. So there have been a little bit of movement, especially within the Big 12, probably. But there is a cluster of teams. So you have Baylor at the very top. They're my second overall team behind Gonzaga. But then my ninth ranked team overall, Oklahoma, down to 15, Texas. So I have Oklahoma number 9, so they're a 3 seed. West Virginia's a 3 seed, 11 overall. And then Texas Tech at 14 overall, and Texas, 4 seed, also 15 overall. So 2 3 seeds and 2 4 seeds from the Big 12 clustered in a spot, 7 different spots there. Does that mean you think West Virginia is the best of those 4 teams? We talked about the Big 12 a pretty good amount of, I think it was 2 or 3 episodes ago, just generally top to bottom, and how we haven't really seen this landscape that much in the Big 12 with having 2 just complete dog shit teams in Kansas State and Iowa State. But again, Oklahoma, West Virginia, Texas Tech, and Texas. Does that mean you're just surprised at where the stock is of West Virginia now versus what you said 6 or 7 weeks ago when Shibuya left, or you actually believe that West Virginia is the best of those teams, which would then make them the second best team in the Big 12?
Yeah, I think it's a lot more about relative value for me. Just, and maybe some of this is like the fan talking, but when that announcement came, I'm thinking, oh man, here we go again. Like how many different ways can this team, you know, find to shoot itself in the foot over the years, or just bad luck or what have you. And I think they're kind of right there. I think Oklahoma is probably the most consistent team. Ironically, that's coming the night after they lose to Kansas State, which is just not a good team like at all. But I do think overall, maybe there's a luck factor there. Maybe there's some sort of inbound negative regression when you look at them, because they've won a lot of games by very, very small margins. But I do think they're pretty consistent. I don't think there's anything they do particularly poorly. I think they're just really solid. They just do everything good. I'm not sure they do anything great. And, you know, that's the thing you could probably say about, I think Texas Tech does some things great. I think West Virginia does some things great. I think Baylor obviously does some things great. So that's probably a knock on Oklahoma, but that's a pretty weak knock, because there's a lot of things that Kruger's team does well this year.
That's a perfect segue into the team that I'm probably the highest on now versus where I was 6-7 weeks ago, going down just a little bit, but not too far.
Colgate.
It is Colgate. It's not Colgate, because Colgate is not I like Colgate. Like, I had Matt Langel, the head coach, on the show a couple of years ago. I think he was on the same episode that you were. Yeah,
we were on the same episode.
Did extremely well. I mean, great guy. I like Colgate, but I'm not going to talk about Colgate anymore because it'll get me all worked up. Creighton. I had Creighton 18th overall in my last bracketology. They're a team that historically I have kind of shit on because they've always felt like a team that has an empty resume and they never do anything in March, but I am extremely high on Creighton right now. Going off of what you said about Oklahoma, I don't know if Creighton does like that many things great, but they're not bad like anywhere. Maybe they could get to the free throw line a few more times, but they're extremely balanced. You know, going to what you said about like Kansas State, I don't care that much about the Georgetown loss for Creighton. I think it showed they had similarly to Oklahoma, they have some minor issues. But I went back to that game. Georgetown shot 47% from deep, 10 of 21. I mean, you talk about going 7 of 21 instead, hitting closer to that season average. Creighton wins that game, and we're not really even talking about it at all. I'm not at all high on Villanova, but I am still high on what Creighton did to Villanova and completely smashing them. That game was not nearly as close to the final score. I think the final score was like 86 to 70. I mean, that was a 20-25 point game. For most of that, there's a lot of weird, I mean, I talked about Colgate. There's a lot of weird resumes this year. Creighton isn't on the level of Colgate, but Creighton has one of them because the net kind of likes them. And losing to Georgetown was actually one of 4 quadrant 3 losses, which I don't know if another team in the top 100 of the net has that many quadrant 3 losses. The net likes Creighton enough given those losses. KenPom likes Creighton quite a bit. A lot of other metrics are kind of in the middle. They were a 5, like I said, in my latest bracketology, the 18th overall team. They might bump up a little bit. I had like USC, Florida State, Texas, Texas Tech above them. So we'll see where everything lands on Thursday. I'm pretty certain that a lot of people will take the mindset that I usually have with Creighton. If they're a 5, they're going to be a very popular upset pick if they stay there. But for now, I kind of like them. I'm going to watch them very closely over the next couple of weeks to see if they stay in that 5 range. If they bump up to 4, this is the first time I feel like where I think Creighton might actually be undervalued. And we can talk probably betting as we get closer to the tournament, but I think Creighton could have a lot of value. Anybody else that you are much higher on now than you were a few weeks ago?
It's funny you say Creighton, because I almost mentioned them earlier about like, how deep do you want to go down into the net? I could find some Final Four people because they're absolutely on that list. If you want to go down toward the bottom part of the bracket, just to throw a couple names out there, Maryland, I think, is coming on really nicely right now. I am a little bit skeptical of the Big Ten overall because, if you're telling me that 4 of the top 7 teams, according to the net, are in the Big Ten, I just don't know about that. But I think Maryland is coming on really nicely. And if they do end up finding their way in, and I think they will, then I like them to maybe pull an upset in the first round. I mentioned Florida State earlier. I think they've been just really, really solid. Louisville is kind of putting some stuff here together late. I think they'll get in. So I do think there's a couple just sort of down the ballot there. Winthrop, how do you feel about Winthrop?
Getting in 12 seed, 13 seed? What was their last loss? I mean, they haven't lost since like November, right?
It's been a minute. Yeah, it's been a while.
I do like, I mean, I talk about how weak I think like the 2-3-4-ish range is. I mean, I'm not really sure what to think about the Big 12. I watch a lot of Big 12 basketball, but I still can't quite put my finger on that. I think that like the 12 to 13, 14 is the strongest we're ever going to see. And I'm not sure if people realize that because generally every single year we just hear the tournament is wide open, regardless of who's good and who's not good. We always hear the tournament is wide open. Yeah, it's wide open every single year. We have some legitimate title contenders at the top in Gonzaga, in Baylor. If you like Ohio State, if you like Michigan, everybody's going to pick the 12-5 upsets, no matter who is 5, no matter who is 12, no matter if they even know who Winthrop's coach is. Everybody is going to do that. This year in particular, like if Western Kentucky is a 12, Belmont, we know what they can do. I get it. It's Casey Alexander. It's a little bit of a different deal for Belmont. We know what they can do in the tournament, though. Winthrop, Toledo, Siena, UNC, Greensboro. It seems like there's a really strong group there that might not have had as many non-conference opportunities as they would have if COVID didn't hit. I think a lot of people are, like, I don't want to say sleeping on them because, like I said, people are going to pick the 12-5 upset no matter what. But I kind of like Winthrop coming in at a 12 or a 13, maybe beating
13-4.
Maybe beating like a Missouri if they get up there. Maybe knocking off my Jayhawks if it's a 4-13.
Can we do 60 seconds on Kansas real quick since you name dropped them? Like this Please. Is a presidential debate. Like once it gets mentioned. Now I can Please. Take it wherever I want.
You can respond, and then I'll interrupt you 30 seconds in.
That'd be great. There was a lot of hype. Hype might be a bit of a strong way to put it, but like the narrative the last week has been very kind to Kansas. Like, oh, they're putting some things together. Here comes the late season push for Bill Self, boys. And then I went and looked. They were on a 5-game win streak. I went and looked at who they beat. It was like Iowa State twice, Kansas State, Texas Tech.
TCU, I think, was in there.
Yeah, and I think TCU was in there. Is that just, hey, we need – this is on the talking points list? Or did you really feel like they legitimately had something and just playing lower level, you know, lower Big 12 opponents. I mean, the Texas Tech win is obviously nice. I'm not knocking that.
Yeah.
But just, you know, putting together some stuff against maybe the teams toward the bottom of the conference was helping them find something, or it was just, yeah, we beat the bad teams. That's what happened. That's what the schedule looked like.
So I was thinking about this last night during the Texas game, and what it felt like a lot to me was the Bears and Trubisky last year. So they started out pretty well. KU started out okay. I mean, like, they had the Creighton win. We didn't know how good Creighton was back then. They had the Kentucky win. We didn't know how good or bad Kentucky was back then. And they kind of cratered once they started playing real teams. They started playing the top third of the Big 12. They didn't really get blown out in those games. When they went down to Waco, they actually played pretty well. I think they lost by 8. And then Trubisky comes back and has this reincarnation, all this bullshit, and they end up beating a lot of bad teams. And then everyone's kind of saying, well, I don't know. Look at the Bears. Trubisky is fixed. Matt Nagy, maybe he found something. And they lose the Packers and they go down to New Orleans and they have like 100 yards of total offense. That's kind of what it feels like to me. I am more optimistic about Kansas basketball right now than I have been at any point in the season. Because pointing to all of their losses, A, they don't have a bad loss at all. I mean, their resume is not that bad. They're going to be ranked higher in the tournament bracket than a lot of people think, and it's going to piss a lot of people off because they're just going to scream, well, it's Kansas. They got the benefit of the doubt. Yeah.
Totally.
They actually have pretty nice metrics. I mean, like, all the metrics like them generally. They have, as they do every year, really strong strength of schedule, strong strength of record, all that stuff. I think they were, 20 in the net. They're going to be, like, a 4 or 5 seed. If they play well over the next couple of weeks, they will be a 3 seed. And people will be pissed because they'll get ahead of Texas or Texas Tech or somebody. That being said, they have so many flaws that I can't take it seriously. I think, oddly, they're going to enter the tournament as a team that everybody hates because they think they're ranked higher than what they should be in the bracket. I'm having a hard time answering your question because I don't know what to think of them yet. And I know we're talking here in late February.
That was a good answer.
But I don't know. They have so many issues. They shoot more mid-range jumpers than probably any team at any level of basketball, and it drives me freaking crazy. We've gone more than 60 seconds on it. The answer is, I don't have a damn clue. Let me ask you this. Do you fall in love with the team that's a little bit down ballot, a little bit down the region, like a 5, 6, or 7, 8 seed? Because every year I feel myself falling in love with a team that winds up being like a 6 or a 7 seed. It was Houston back in 2018. That was the one that lost to, I think, Michigan on the buzzer beater. I believe it was Cincinnati that I fell in love with last year as that 7 seed. They lost to Iowa in the first round. Do you find yourself doing that? Falling in love around this time of the year, and then come Sunday night, you have a 6 seed Houston in the Final Four of like 5 different brackets? Because I haven't done that yet this year. Like, I like Creighton, but I feel like Creighton is almost too good for where I generally fall in love with the team. Like I said, it's usually in like that 6, 7, 8 range. I don't think I've done that yet this year. Like, I might be on several teams in the Mountain West. I think the quality of that conference is just being overlooked, because I think when people see that San Diego State isn't shooting for a 1 seed again this year, or Nevada isn't at the top like they were for a couple years, I think that the Mountain West hasn't been mentioned as much nationally, and maybe this is a separate conversation if that turns into some betting value come turning time. But anyways, have you fallen for a team yet that you have a bad feeling might break your heart in March? Is it West Virginia?
Every year. They're my terrible, destructive Valentine every year. I know I'm inclined to do this. So, like, historically, the answer to your question is yes. But I've been trying really hard not to. I think BYU might be that team for me this year.
But then you go and lose to Pepperdine, and you're thinking, oh, shit.
it's kind of them to, like, drop some breadcrumbs that I shouldn't get into an abusive relationship with them in February.
And then they go and play fairly well against Gonzaga, almost as well as any team has played this year, and then you lose to Pepperdine. I don't know what to do with BYU. They're going to be like a 7 or 8 seed, and they're right in that sweet spot. I mean, they're right in that sweet spot of BYU gets Houston in the second round. Yeah, give me BYU. I mean, that's what it feels like to me. I think you're spot on with the feel of BYU. I just don't know how good they actually are.
Yeah, so I've been trying to work on this where I tell myself, you know, like, I really stick to the profiles of what it is, like, what teams win championships. And being, because I'm a little upset drunk to begin with. Like, I had some years, I think I picked Georgetown to win the national championship like 4 years in a row. I think they won a combined 3 games in all 4 years. Like, just ridiculous.
Oh, that was when they got beat by Florida Gulf Coast. They got smashed by Ohio as the 3 seed. Yeah,
yeah, the Ohio one for sure. I was like, I have a problem. I need to go to Georgetown rehab. But I mean, I've done a much better job, I'd say, the last 3, 4, 5 years at playing the percentages and really doing my homework. Okay, this is the sort of team that wins. Okay, they don't have any glaring defensive, you know, deficiencies. They can rebound. Like, really sticking to the numbers and sort of, as Mel Gibson might say, aim small, miss small, rather than having, like, all of a sudden I've got a Sweet 16 that has like an 11, a 12, a 15, and a 7, and I'm like, what just happened? why did I do this? Was I drunk 5 days ago when I filled this out? Like, what was I thinking? Because that can happen. It's not even unprecedented, but it's, you know, it's that same principle that we talk about all the time here. Like, what's the most likely thing to happen? It's not that it's possible, because we know it's possible, but is it likely?
Well, maybe we'll do like a half an episode on bracket strategy after Selection Sunday on that Monday episode, because you have to understand like what you're going for. If you're in one of those tournaments for the perfect bracket, yeah, you need to pick some stuff like that. I mean, go back and look, going over historical stuff, 14s beat 3s and 13s beat 4s and 12 beat 5. Like, it happens all the time. So if your bracket doesn't have any of that shit, or just a little bit of it, that's not going to win. Whereas if you're just going for points, it's usually not worth it to pick the 14 over the 3, because the 14 is not making the Elite 8, whereas 3 Iowa could. Aim small, miss small. That was my first rated R movie that I ever saw.
My parents sent me out of the room for the Creek scene.
Like, when it was happening, they ushered you out?
Yeah, they were like, hey, we're pretty sure some stuff's about to go down.
And well, yeah, the music turns a little bit.
Out,
yeah.
So
yeah. Music turns and he gets into that creek.
Go find some pretzels in the pantry or something. We'll talk to you in 8 minutes.
So it wasn't the TV version where I think they have it as mud as opposed to blood. You're watching the real VHS.
Oh, version. Yeah. Oh, I believe a Blockbuster trip was made for that one. And we did not rent movies very often.
All right. Where are we going today?
We're going to stay in the NBA. You know, you're never supposed to win anything, but the Oklahoma City +7.5.
Yeah, I was wondering if you were going to bring that up, or if I was supposed to bring it up, or if it was a sore spot for you.
Yeah, it looked pretty good on Monday, and then they just decided to hit the showers 12 minutes early. So thanks to the Thunder players for sitting out the fourth quarter, whatever. We're still up. We're moving on. Sticking in the NBA, actually, with a similar strategy, fading a team playing the last road game of a long non-conference road trip. This time, one that is far less interested in winning, because Miami, and I would bet against them again. I liked my handicap, but they are off to a slow start, and so they were more motivated to need these West Coast games. I'm going against a team that is much less motivated tonight, or at least with this pick. It's a Friday night game, and we're recording this Wednesday, but I'm looking at going against the Sacramento Kings. This is a team that probably already knows it's not going to make the playoffs. I'm not saying they're mathematically out of contention or anything, but it doesn't seem to be shaking out their way. They're on a long East Coast road trip. They will end Friday night against Detroit. Now, anytime you're betting on the Pistons, you are taking your life in your own hands. Again, just as the case with the last episode, we're a couple days out from this, so we're not quite sure what the line is yet. I expect it to be small. Detroit could be a small home dog. They could be a small favorite. I'm not really sure. But unless it is something just really, really weird, I am backing the Pistons to cover this game. And obviously, just like the last time, I did a little follow-up on Twitter where I sort of clarified the position once the number was live and the podcast had dropped. I will certainly do that again. But I am looking at the Pistons Friday night going against the Kings. They are on the back end of a back-to-back. And the last game of a long East Coast road trip, so we are going to be betting against Sacramento.
MLB win totals now available on BetMGM.com. Just navigate to that baseball page, and then you'll see all 30 teams there under games. You can click into each team, Diamondback season specials, Braves season specials, Orioles season specials, and so on. I mentioned this a couple of weeks back when we were briefly talking about futures, and I was thinking about this as we knew we were going to talk about MLB win totals. When you hit that big Cubs total, was that 2018? It was like a five-figure bet on the Cubs over, and you hit it. Wasn't it like late August or early September you cashed a five-figure ticket?
It was, I think it was four figures, so I don't want to unnecessarily blow my own winnings up. But it was a night. I think it was a $5,000 bet. Yes, it was.
2018?
I think it might have been 17, because I think I had Tampa in 2018. Either way. It was toward the end of the season where I got the over. It was something like 93.5, somewhere around there.
Cubs are nowhere near that this year. Nope. We're going to talk about the Cardinals here. The Mets have skyrocketed up World Series odds, and their total is now at 90.5. I don't know what it would have been, let's say, 4 or 5 weeks ago, but their total right now, 90.5 for the Mets. The Cardinals have also jumped in World Series odds, too, after that Arenado trade. They're only at 86.5. I was a little bit surprised by that number. Then I started wondering, like, what is your level of concern over cancellations here? Because if a team plays 60 games with these bets, the action is locked. I mean, which can work for you definitely if you play these smart, but it's still worth noting that. What is your, maybe concern, like, isn't the right question here. Maybe it's just, how is that playing into your strategy? The very likelihood of losing games, how are you using that when you look at totals this year?
Well, I think what I tried to do was target unders anyway. So I have that working in my favor to begin with. But the deal with baseball is, as we've discussed before, this is the law of large numbers. This is not who is the best, or I guess in some ways it is, but it's not who has the highest ceiling, who burns the hottest, who's got the best pitcher. This is purely over 162 games, like, where are you going to shake out? And if you study like the historical trends of certain franchises, and I'll give you a very good example here in a second, you will start to see places where you can find an advantage. The thing that's similar to all sports season win totals is going against conventional wisdom. So I'll give you an example of that as well, and I'll start with that. Obviously, everybody and their brother, when we're talking about the public, everybody and their brother knows the Dodgers are good, thinks the Dodgers are going to win a lot of games. And I'll be honest, when I saw the Dodgers win total, which is only 101.5, I was a little surprised it wasn't higher. Now, I'm staying away from this because betting an over on the Dodgers win total is like the squarest possible thing you could do right now. They've had, you know, as good as they've been, yes, they added yet another arm to that rotation that is just sick, but it's still a super, super public team. Everybody and their brother knows the Dodgers are good. They've got a lot of turnover in the offseason. They're dealing with a lot of stuff. We don't know what's going to happen with Justin Turner. So I am staying away from the Dodgers. I'm refusing to bet the over on a team, even though I kind of thought the number maybe looked a little soft. So that's an example of like, hey, don't fall into those popular traps. I'll give you another one. Tampa. Tampa didn't win the World Series, but they were in it. Tampa's total is a pretty modest 85.5. Now, you might be tempted to go and smash that over, but they too have dealt with a significant number of off-season personnel. So that's something I'm staying away from. I'm not falling into these obvious traps, and that's something you should avoid too. Instead, I'm looking to target other things, things that make sense historically or things that I think are going to shake out over the long haul of, you know, a 162-game season. So for instance, a bet that I made last year, pretty sizable one, like low four figures, that cashed, and I am right back on it again this year, is the Phillies under. Andrew Doughty, I know you're not super locked into baseball. And
I haven't looked at the Phillies total. Is that what you're asking me?
No, not at all. I know you're not super locked into MLB, and especially probably not the NL East, if I had to guess. But do you know the last time the Philadelphia Phillies had a season over 500?
I just looked for some MLB preview thing I wrote for BetMGM maybe 3 weeks ago, but I can't remember. It was right after that run of at the World Series, mm-hmm. and they got bounced early, I think. 2009?
2011. It's been 10 okay. years.
Okay.
10 years since they were 82-80 or better. And I actually think they were exactly 82-80, if my memory served me correctly, in 2011. So the total, when you look at it, is 80.5. Basically, the sports books are saying, do you think the Phillies are going to be 500? And when you think about the Phillies, if you're just like an average kind of fan who's aware of baseball, or maybe even you are like an active baseball fan, but you're not super locked into some of these trends, you might think Phillies, Bryce Harper, you know, that's a division that, you know, there could be some wins there. We don't know what's going on with the Nationals. Miami's up and down. You know, Atlanta has been good. And the Mets, you know, when they have it right, they're pretty good. But there's probably some wins in that division. They've got some big bats. You know, the pitching isn't atrocious. They're going to be 500, right? But when you look at the history says, not necessarily. Now, to be fair, in the last 10 years, they do have two seasons where they were exactly 81-81, which means they wouldn't have had a positive record, but they would have beaten this over 80.5 bet. Nonetheless.
Yeah, I just pulled it up too. And they also had 2018, they were 80-82.
So there you go. I mean, they certainly right. flirt with 500. And when you look at last year, it was the exact same bet, actually. It was not a 162-game season. It was a 60-game season. But the bet, I believe, that I took was under 29.5 wins for the Phillies. And they were like 28-32, 27-33.
Yep,
like right
28-32. Yep.
Exactly. So they certainly approached that number. But it's rare that they actually get over that hump. So I am going to be betting under 80.5 on the Philadelphia Phillies for the win total. Now, of course, and this will apply to these other ones I'm going to mention here as well, any games that they miss go in my favor, right? Because of that lock, the 60 lock number that you mentioned. So that's an added benefit to me. Now, maybe they only miss one series. That's still three games. And when you're talking about a team that's gone 81-81 twice and 80-82 a third time in the last 10 years, three games can matter quite a bit. So I like that bet. Another bet that I'm looking at here is the Red Sox at the exact same number as the Phillies, under 80.5. The AL East is always one of the more interesting divisions in Major League Baseball. I think we know that the Yankees have an absolutely stacked payroll. Tampa was in the World Series last year. Baltimore, which is my team, I'm an Orioles fan. Look, we have not been good for a few years. I'm not expecting big things from us this year either. But I do think they're going to be more competitive from the teams a couple years ago that went like 45 and 117, which is just incomprehensibly bad. I do think Baltimore can take some games off the Sox. I think Toronto's scrappy. So this is a division that does have some depth. There's not a ton of easy wins in there, I don't think, to illustrate my point. I think Baltimore's win total 2 years ago was like 49. This year, they're around like 64. So they are improving. The roster is getting better. Toronto made some pretty high-profile acquisitions in the offseason. I think this is a tough division for Boston to get to 500 in, especially when you consider what happened last year. Dead last in the AL East. Yes, they finished behind Baltimore. So, yes, they've made some moves, and I think they'll be better. But for them to jump from last place to basically 500 or better, when I don't think this is a team that has a ton of star power right now, that seems like it's more centered around the brand of the Red Sox and the fact that the Red Sox are a public team than actually reflecting the fact that the Red Sox are good. We talk about the marketplace all the time. This is a Red Sox marketplace number where people, I think, know that there's a big market for betting the over on Boston, when in reality, there's a lot of traffic in this division, and the roster is not nearly as good as the ones that have won recent World Series.
Are you taking any overs at all this year?
I am flirting with Oakland.
My question is basically saying, do you normally take that many overs, or how much of this is potential cancellation related? Is that why Oakland is really your only flirtation, even with the over at all?
Yeah, I usually find one over that I like, and I'll hit it pretty good.
You're not heavy on the overs no matter what. So the threat of cancellations isn't, you mentioned that it matters, but it's not a huge factor.
It's just something that I like. And I do think that it's probably pushed me to pull the trigger on more unders than I would normally, but I'm not going in like hunting for unders because of that. I think it's just an added factor there at the end. I'll give you one more, maybe even two more that I like. I like the under for the White Sox. I want to say 91.5. Yeah, 91.5. In the last 50 years, the White Sox have won 92 games or more three times. Most recently, 2005, when they won the World Series. So historically, there is not a ton of evidence to support the White Sox being this good. This is a reaction to how good the White Sox were last year. And I think in a full-length season, yes, they have a nice roster. I don't quite think they're going to get to 92. I could see them getting to the mid or upper 80s. So again, they could get close. But when you're talking about baseball, which plays 162 games, if you're one game off, you know, that's already like 1%. You know, or half of a percent. So you can't be fooled into thinking, well, you're going to go under 91 and you think they're going to win 88 games. Well, that's actually a pretty big gap. So I like the under there. And then one more under I'll probably have a small play on. Seattle under 72.5. You've got the Astros, which we know are certainly competent, if not outright good. The A's. Very good, very consistent team. The Angels are talented. We never really know to what degree they're going to put it together. And then the Rangers, I'm not really sure what to make of them. I think they'll probably be toward the bottom of the division, but certainly they could take some games off Seattle and vice versa. The thing I was told about Seattle that makes such perfect sense, and this was from a Seattle fan actually, was Seattle always starts out hot, even when they're, you know, kind of mediocre. But the thing about Seattle, they're in the northwest corner of the United States. They're not really near any other teams. Their division spreads all the way to freaking Texas. They're so far away from everything in a sport that lasts like more than half of the calendar year. They just fade down the stretch and they just lose games and they lose games and then they kind of give up on the season. And that's just how a lot of those seasons go. So when I look at their number, which is 72.5, in terms of percentage points, it's basically the exact same percentage of games that they won last year. But last year was a compressed season. So you don't necessarily have some of those late losses that you expect to see in the calendar. I expect more negative regression in 2021 than we saw in 2020 because of the compressed schedule. And that's why I like a small play on the Mariners under.
We will be back right here on Monday, so hit that subscribe button on Overcast, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, whatever app you're using. You'll get that auto download when that drops. Every episode will drop at 6 a.m. that day on Monday and Thursdays. And then we'll be back 1 week from now on Thursday on High Motor by BetMGM. Thank you for listening. Thank you for checking out High Motor by BetMGM.
I saw a friend today. It had been a while. And we forgot each other's names, but it didn't matter, 'cause deep inside the feeling still remained the same. We talked of knowing one before you've met, and how you feel more than you see, and other worlds that lie in spaces.